When the crowd around Esme had thinned, her cousin Lucy came up.
I have your accounting. The herd has done well.
Good.
Esme sipped from the mug someone had handed her and felt dizzy from the fumes alone.
Could you get me some water? This is too strong.
Oh, they want to follow the old ways into the bedding of the Lambride, do they? I'll bring you water.
Lucy darted off and was back soon, this time with a handsome young man at her heels. Esme took the jug of cool water.
Thanks.
When the long ceremony was over, Esme's stepmother led her to the suite her great-grandmother had occupied.
I hope you will stay a while. This is your home. We can redecorate the rooms.
But my room's upstairs.
Not unless you wish it. Of course, if you insist, but this has always been... It's the oldest part of the house.
She was trying to be tactful and helpful. Esme knew that, just as she knew that she was too tired after all this to discuss anything calmly. What did it matter, after all, where she slept?
I think I'll lie down a while.
Of course. Let me help you with these things.
Her stepmother had hardly touched her, as near as she could remember. It felt strange indeed to have help from her. She was, in fact, a deft maid, quick with the fastenings, and she knew exactly when to turn away, the outer garments folded carefully in her arms, and leave Esme alone. Esme woke in late afternoon to the chill light of an overcast sky. Clouds had moved in. Nothing looked right, and then she remembered. She was not upstairs, not in her own bed, but in great-grandmother's. Except it was her own now, in a way that the bed upstairs had not been. Hers not by custom or assignment, but by tradition and law. Everything was hers now. This bed, the chairs, and the walls around them, and the fields around the walls, from the distant marshy seacoast to the mountain forests. Fruit trees, olive trees, nut trees, gardens and plowland, every flower in the field, every wild creature in the woods. Only the livestock might belong to others, but it was she who would grant grazing rights or refuse them. Which land could be put to plow and what would be pasture? She pushed the covers aside and sat up. Her stepmother, or someone, had laid out more normal clothes. Not anything she'd brought, but new. Soft black wool trousers and a multicolored pullover top. Esme found the adjoining bath unit and took a shower, then dressed in the new clothes. In the hall, Lucy was talking quietly to Sonny and Berthold. Sonny looked at her, a long, considering look.
You slept well?
Yes, and now I'm hungry again.
A few minutes only.
Sonny turned toward the kitchen.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
Her father came out of the library wing.
Ah, Esme. I hope you're rested now. I don't know how long you can stay, but there's a great deal to be done.
Not until after eating. We're ready now.
Esme realized they had been waiting for her. The meal made clearer than any explanations how her status had changed. She sat at the head of the table, where her great-grandmother had sat on the rare occasions she joined the family at table, which deposed Papa Stefan from his position as her representative. She had not imagined he could look so small, hunched over his plate halfway down the table. She ate slowly, watching and listening, trying to feel out the hidden currents of emotion. Her stepmother and her Aunt Sonny, for instance, were eyeing each other like two cats over a plate of fish. Her father and Berthold, though studiously polite, seemed both particularly tense. Of the youngsters, only Lucy was at the table. The young ones, she supposed, had been fed informally earlier.
Have you decided whom to name as your heir?
Not now.
No, I haven't. It's all too new. I will need to consider carefully.
She would need to look at the family tree. She had no idea who might be eligible. It might even be Lucy. That wouldn't be so bad.
The paperwork starts tomorrow. All the judicial red tape.
How long does that last?
Who knows? It's not something we've done for a long time. And since then, some of the laws have changed. It's no longer enough for the family to swear agreement to the whole change. It has to be done piece by piece.
It sounded far worse than administrative procedures. If the whole family had to pledge peaceful acquiescence to the change in ownership of each field, each woodland patch...
At least much of it can be done by proxy now. My guess is that it will take hours, if not days, and all to do over again when you abdicate.
If she abdicates, she shall stay, marry well, and be the land bride we need. She's been a hero to the world. She has proved herself. But they cannot need one young hero as badly as we need her here. She could retire now.
Her father gave Esme a look and a tiny lift of the shoulders. He knew what her career meant to her, as he knew what his meant to him. But there was much he didn't know as well. And at the moment, Esme could almost see the wisdom of leaving Fleet before they forced her out.
It may not be me that you need, Papa Stefan, but someone who has lived here all along, who knows more.
You can learn. You were never stupid, just stubborn. And why should you serve the Familius Regnant? We have not even a seat in their Grand Council. They do not respect us. They will use you up and discard you at the end, whenever you displease them, or they tire of you.
That was too near the mark. Esme wondered if some word of her disgrace had leaked through the news nets.
Nonsense, Papa. Young officers of her quality are rare. They won't let her go easily. Look what she's already done.
Finished eating is what she's done. Dessert, anyone?
Esme was glad enough to have the subject turned and accepted a bowl of spiced custard gratefully. Next morning, the legal formalities began. Her father had brought an entire court to the house, judge, advocates, recording clerks, and all. Once she was sworn in as heir, the true land bride, the real work began. Every land steward, including Papa Stefan and her father, had to submit an accounting of the management of each division of the land bride's gift. Esme learned things about the family estancia she had never known, because in her great-grandmother's long tenure as land bride, changes had been made before Esme was born, which had now to be explained. From the trivial to the major, the last 70 years of history were laid out in detail. Esme would have stipulated that the accounts were correct if she could, but the judge would have none of it.
You were away, Sarah. You cannot know. And although these are your family, and you are naturally reluctant to consider them capable of the least infidelity or dishonesty, it is my duty to protect both you and the land bride gift itself. These accounts must be scrutinized carefully. That is why we brought along the accountants from the registry.
Oh, and how long will that take?
Meanwhile, Sarah, as long as a representative of your family is here to answer any questions, we need not detain you.
That was a relief. Esme escaped, only to be captured by Lucy, who had in mind a lengthy discussion of the herd she managed for Esme. From one accountant to another, but Lucy was so eager to explain what she'd been doing that Esme did not resist as she was led through the kitchens, out the back of the house, and into the stable offices.
You hadn't said what direction you wanted to take, so I decided to sell the bottom 10% at the regional sales, not under your name. Your reproductive rates are above the family average, but not much.
I didn't know they could be improved at all.
Oh, yes. I started reading off-world equine reproductive journals. Couldn't afford a lot of what they talk about, but I made some changes in management, and everyone smirked at me until the first full crop. Then they said it was normal statistical variation, but your second full crop hit the ground this year, and it was a point ahead of last year's.
Esme had never had any interest in equine reproduction, but she knew natural enthusiasm when she saw it. Lucy had learned strategies for identifying the best mares and which should be culled from the herd. She had even looked into exporting gene stock to other horse-breeding worlds at a profit after an initial investment. Esme was satisfied that she had definitely picked the right manager for her herd, and maybe more than that. When all the business topics had been exhausted, Lucy gave Esme a challenging stare.
You look worse than you did when you left.
You have less tact.
Was it the fighting? They say the blood horde is terrible.
No, I don't really want to talk about it.
You weren't this grumpy before either. Something's wrong.
The girl was persistent as a horsefly. It crossed Esme's mind that tactical ability could be shown in more than one way.
I have had some problems. There's nothing you could do. What?
Since you're making me guess, I say you are lovesick. You have all the signs.
Lovesick?
So, is it lovesickness or something else?
Lucy, there are things I can't tell you about. Fleet things. Sometimes bad things happen.
Esme, for pity's sake, I grew up in a military household. I can tell worry about a war from a personal worry. And you needn't try to pretend that's what's going on.
Well, it is, Ms. Persistence. Great-grandmother died. I've had to take on the whole estate. There's a lot to worry about.
Lucy turned the conversation back to the horses, and for an hour they spoke only of this line or that, this outcross line or another. Finally, they walked up to the house together.
Are you going to marry and settle down here, cousin? The way Papa Stefan wants?
Esme realized that this indelicate question had been blurted within the hearing of half the kitchen staff and Berthold, who had wandered into the kitchen before the meal as usual.
I'm a fleet officer. You know I told everyone I would have to appoint a trustee and an heir.
Yes, I know that. But you hadn't spent even a week on Altiplano yet. You could change your mind. Especially if things aren't going well in your fleet.
Oh.
Esme could have done without that. Berthold's humor was uncomfortable at best. He finished chewing a couple of olives he'd filched.
You see what she's like.
I'm ready for lunch. And those had better not be the export quality olives.
You sound exactly like grandmother. She could squeeze oil out of the very smell of olive.
Esme led the way to the dining room.
Lunch. A morning spent with lawyers and accountants and then Lucy has starved my brain.
Pradish Lorani turned the pamphlet over and over in his hands. He wasn't sure about this. Yes, it was totally unfair that Merlin had taken the children and moved away, that Sophia and Tara had been promoted over his head, that over half the seats on the station's Citizens' Council were held by women. He loathed the very thought of artificial births and manipulation of the human genome. If that wasn't interfering with God's plan, he couldn't think of anything that was. But while he agreed in principle that society was corrupt and degraded, he could not quite convince himself that therefore it naturally followed that blowing up people was a godly act. He made up his mind. He would continue to support the Gender Defense League. He would continue to argue with his former wife that she was misunderstanding his reasons for disciplining the children by traditional methods. But he would not attend the next meeting with the representative of the God-fearing militia who had attempted to recruit him to help place explosive charges. In a spasm of disgust, he threw the pamphlet toward the orifice of the station's recycling system, but he turned away before it slid into the chute and did not see it miss to land right in front of the "Please ensure trash enters hopper" sign. Nor did he see the prune-faced old woman who glared at his retreating back as she stooped to pick up the crumpled pages and put them in carefully, but who stopped, her attention arrested by the glaring grammatical error in the first sentence. Sarah Alicia Spielman, as ardent a grammarian as she was a supporter of public neatness, took the pamphlet home to use as a bad example in her next complaint to the local school trustees. But when she read it, she called her friend, whose grandson was a member of station security, instead. She did not connect the lazy litter bum or her own actions with the discovery, 2 days later, of the corpse of one Pradish Lorani, who had been brutally attacked in his own apartment. Others made that connection. After lunch, Lucy followed Esme into the land bride's quarters with obvious intent. Esme, who'd been hoping for a time alone to think things over, decided she would have more peace if she let Lucy talk herself out.
So, what is it now? Do you have 5 other schemes for the Estancia, or are you planning to take over the government?
Lucy, it seemed, loved a boy, young man actually, in a neighboring household.
Your father is set against it. I don't know why. It's a good family.
Who is it?
At the name, Esme nodded.
I know why, but I think he's wrong.
Is this another of those things you can't tell me about? Because if it is, I think it's mean to let me know you know.
Come all the way in and sit down.
Esme shut the door carefully. No one would disturb them now. She gestured to one of the comfortable chintz-covered chairs and sat in another one herself.
I'll tell you, but it's not a pleasant tale. You know, I was miserable the last time I was here, and I suppose no one told you why?
No one knew, except that you had some kind of fight with your father.
Yes, well, there are too many secrets going around, and now that I'm Land Bride, I'm going to do things differently.
With a calmness that somewhat surprised her, Esme recounted the incident from her childhood, how she had run away to find her father after her mother's death from the fever, how she had ended up in the aftermath of the battle, and finally, the vicious assault against her. Lucy's expression went from sympathy to shock and then to anger when Esme explained that the incident had been covered up and hidden, even from Esme herself.
That's hideous! Lying to you like that!
And the thing is, the person who did it was of that family. The man you love is his nephew, his older brother's son.
Arlen! You can't mean Arlen! But he was killed in action! They have a shrine to him in the front hall!
I know. He was killed in action. By Seb Coron, for assaulting a child. Me.
Oh! My! And his father was commanding something. So your father didn't tell him? Or did he?
I don't know if his family knows anything at all. But even if they do, it was all kept quiet. He got his medals. He got his shrine in the front hall.
And your father doesn't want anything to do with their family. I understand.
No. They stayed friends, or at least close professionally. I think my father considered it an aberration. Nothing to do with his family.
Lucy's eyes glittered with unshed tears.
I'll break it off, Esme.
Don't be ridiculous. If you love him, there's no reason to break it off on my account.
You wouldn't mind.
I don't know how I'd react if he looks much like Arlen did, but that shouldn't matter to you or the family, if he's suitable otherwise. Is he a good man?
I think so. But girls in love are supposed to be bad judges of character.
Seriously?
Seriously? He makes my knees weak, my heart pound. And I've seen him at work. He wants to be a doctor, and he helps out in the Estancia clinic. He's gentle.
Well, then, for what good it will do, I'm on your side.
What good it will do? Don't be silly. You're the Land Bride. If you approve a match, no one's going to argue with you.
Are you sure?
Of course I am. Didn't you realize? Oh, did it? What happened? Make you no one to marry?
It may have. I didn't think of it at the time. I just wanted off planet, away from it all.
But surely you have met someone, sometime, who made your knees weak.
Esme looked down at her hands. Everything she had told Lucy up to now wasn't as painful as this.
Who is it? Or was it?
Was. Another fleet officer. Good family.
Did he not love you?
No, he liked me, I think. I think he liked me a lot, actually.
Well, what happened then?
We quarreled.
Ugh! Quarrel? What's a quarrel? Sure you didn't let one quarrel end it.
He's angry.
Is he violent when he's angry? You still love him, that's obvious. So why?
It's mixed up with fleet business. That's why I can't explain.
Oh, you can't stop now. And I'll bet most of it's about you and him anyway. And nothing to do with any universe-shattering secrets. You trust me with your horses and your money? You ought to trust me to keep a few stupid secrets about fleet.
The logic made no sense, but Esme was past caring. She'd held it in as long as she could. She had to talk to somebody. As simply as she could, which turned out to be not very simply at all, she explained about Baron, about her transfer to Command Track, and her arrival at Copper Mountain, and Brunn. When she first mentioned Brunn, Lucy stopped her.
So, that's the rat in the grain bin.
She's not a rat. She's a talented, bright, attractive...
Rat. She went after your man, didn't she? I can see it from here. Used to getting what she wants. Probably started falling in love at 12.
Esme had to smile at Lucy's tone.
It's not that simple, though. I mean, That's what I thought. That's what other people said. With all the time she spent with Baron.
And why weren't you spending time with him?
I was taking double courses, that's why. They both had more time off. Everyone had more time off than I had. And then she talked to me. She said she wanted to be friends. But she was always telling me how to dress, how to do my hair.
You could use some advice there.
It's my hair! Sorry. She wanted to talk about Altiplano and about our customs, and it sounded so condescending. And one day she was talking about Baron, and I just blew up.
Told her to keep her sticky fingers off your man, did you?
Well, not exactly. I told her... I called her names, Lucy. I told her she had no morals worth mentioning and should go away and quit corrupting people.
Woo! I can see I don't ever want you mad at me.
And then I had to leave for the field exercise and escape an evasion. No, I'll tell you about that later. And when I came back, she'd left Copper Mountain, and my commander was furious at me for what I'd said to her. She was under surveillance, being the Speaker's daughter, so they had it all recorded. And somehow the news vid had got hold of it. Baron, I thought he'd slept with her, and then he was mad at me for thinking he was, and as if that wasn't bad enough, she was later captured by pirates, and they tortured her and took her away, and everyone's blaming me.
Land bride you may be, and fleet officer, and decorated hero, but you've been acting like a schoolgirl with her first crush. Your brains have gone all too mush.
What?
Yes! I guess I can see why, no background at all, but still, what a wet ninny you've been! I understand that this was your first love affair, but you've made every mistake there is.
Like what?
Like not telling him. Not telling this Brune person. She may be the sort who snatches other people's lovers for the fun of it, but if you didn't even tell her...
How could I? We hadn't... And anyway, there are regulations.
Quickly, Esme outlined the relevant portions of the code of conduct.
Poppycock!
Esme wondered if she had been like this with Brune. No wonder Brun had flounced away. If she'd known how to flounce, she would have done it herself.
You weren't exploiting Baron. Emotionally, you are younger than I am. You could be reasonably careful and a professional without turning into an icicle.
You don't know.
I do know. You are a fool if you sit here playing about it being land bride when you don't really care about this land at all.
I do so care about this land.
In the abstract, yes. And you'd like it to be here, unchanged when you visit. But you can't convince me that you feel really passionate about whether coastal pastures are cross-fenced to allow kilf grazing or left open and grazed in alternate years.
No.
Or whether to bring in new rootstock for the nut trees or top graft with the latest varieties onto the old.
I suppose not.
Well then, you've always wanted a wider world and you made your way into it. You found love there. That proves it was the right choice for you.
That was a line of reasoning Esme had never heard, let alone thought of, before.
So, don't let anyone take it away from you.
They can. They can ask me to resign my commission.
Have they?
No, not yet. But Admiral Hornet hinted at it.
There's more than one admiral, surely. Esmeya, you're older than I am, and you're the head of my family now. But you cannot be good land bride if your heart is somewhere else. You want a career in the fleet, you want this man Baron, so go get them! No one in our family has ever been shy about going after what he or she wanted. Don't break with tradition.
Lucy sat back, arms crossed, and gave Esme a challenging stare. The tumult inside subsided gradually. It seemed so simple to Lucy, and it wasn't simple. And yet it was.
They're organizing an attempt to free Brun. The ship I was on is part of it. I should be part of it. But Lord Thornbuckle is blaming me for the whole thing. He insists that he doesn't want me to have anything to do with it. And someone I knew in the academy is sticking to Baron like dried egg to a plate.
He's the sort of man other women want. You said that.
Yes, but she's a bad one.
So? What would it take to get you back in Baron's good graces so you can find out if he still loves you? And back in your admiral's good graces.
I suppose if I could convince them somehow that I don't hate Brun, and I didn't ever say she deserved what she got.
They think you said that?
Cassie, the woman who's after Baron, says I did. Says she knew me at the academy, and I was always saying things about the senior families. Of course I didn't.
Muerto de Dios! I would have a knife for that one if I saw her. But if she's having to lie about you to keep Baron away from you, then he's not that eager for her. Go back, Esme. Go back and make them know how good you are.
And you, cousin?
And I will breed horses. And with your consent and support, marry the man I love and have babies.
And be land bride someday?
That is entirely up to you. I don't want that job too soon, I can tell you. At least let me prove my abilities with your herd before I take on another.
Esme sat alone as the light dimmed, thinking over what Lucy had said. She knew what she wanted. She was supposed to be a tactical genius, so it should be possible to figure out what she could do to get herself out of the mess she was in. If she could retrieve her intelligence from the mush her emotions had made. And yet, what she wanted had more to do with emotions than brains. What she wanted was love and respect and honor, and the sense that she was serving something worth serving. She could do nothing about it here. With every passing minute, she realized that no matter how hard she worked, she would always know she had run away from trouble. She would always know she had failed. In her mind's eye, she could see herself, her civilian self, meeting an older baron far in the future. They would be polite. He would admire, politely, her empire. And then he would go away, and she... She blinked back tears and pushed herself up from the chair. The judge and the advocates and the auditors were annoyed when she walked in on them and insisted that she must soon return to Fleet.
We understood you had indefinite leave.
My pardons, sirs, but there are events afoot which I cannot discuss, but which make it very desirable that I return as soon as I can. I must know how long this will take.
We could, if we hurried, have the transfers ready within 5 days.
Esme had already looked up the commercial passenger schedules.
Sirs, the next ship leaves in 5 days, but the one after is another 20 days. I am sure you can have all ready in 4 days, with all the cooperation and resources of this house.
You have honored Altiplano already by your deeds, Sarah. For you, this is possible. Not easy, but possible.
My thanks are eternal, and I will place the household at your service.
On the last of the 4 days, having signed the last paper, Esme asked her father to come to the library, scene of that earlier confrontation. This time, however, she put that aside and asked his advice. With the same precision and organization that she might have briefed someone on a military problem, she told him what she faced.
So you see, far from being a credit to our house, I am in disgrace. But I cannot change that here, and if I stay here...
I see. You are a credit to this house, Esmea, and to Altiplano. You will never be a disgrace in my sight. But I agree. For your own sake, you must clear your name. If you cannot, you are always welcome to return. And you must not give up your land bride gift until this is over. Stand or fall, it will be as the land bride Suiza.
She had been more than half afraid he would demand that she give it up. Her eyes filled.
As for the matter of the speaker's daughter, you were wrong there, and you know it. Her rudeness does not excuse yours. But your reasons for not claiming the man's affections make sense to me, though perhaps not to those with different ways. Still, they will not hold it against you. If you can prove that you wish her no harm, and can convince her when and if she is rescued. As for the man, even I have heard of the Serranos, a remarkable family, and well suited to this house. You must have made friends, Esmea, and this is the time to call on them.
Approach them?
Yes. When under attack, seek allies. You cannot fight all the fleet alone, and when people are lying about you, you need those who will not. If you say nothing, if you avoid them, they can more easily believe the lies are true. Thank you, daughter, for your great courtesy in confiding this to me. I always did care for you.
I know.
She did know, and she also knew it had not been enough, but it was all he had to give. Bitterness rolled over her one last time, and then washed away. With her family's advice in her ears and more resources than she had ever had at her disposal, Esme chose to take the fastest transport she could find. Civilian fast transit passenger ships were almost as fast as fleet and more reliable in schedule. She would not risk being told there was no more room when she held first-class tickets. She had never traveled this way before. In her stateroom, with access to the first-class exercise and entertainment facilities, she thought of Brunn, who had grown up thinking this was normal.
If captivity and brutality are bad for an ordinary person, how must they be for a girl who has experienced luxury and with every whim indulged? How can she withstand the shock?
Brunn had no habit of passive survival. She had no experience of being silenced, of having no one listen to her. She would fret, rebel, bring on herself more punishment and abuse. Only if she had a possibility on which to focus her mind and effort, only if she could imagine herself into a different future, would Brunn be able to concentrate her resistance into that hope and not waste herself on futility. So far as Esme knew, from the little she'd been allowed to know after being banished in disgrace, the planning had concentrated on a covert operation to extract Brunn, with no consideration of her own need for activity. They were thinking of her as a passive object, something to be snatched from a thief, just as her captors had thought of her as a passive object, some valuable to be stolen and appropriated for their own use. Just as she herself had been only an object to the man who raped her in childhood, and had himself been only a disgusting object to the sergeant who killed him. And she again had been only an object when her family ignored her memory of the rape and made her into the outcast with nightmares who lived at the far end of the house. She wondered suddenly if Brunn's family had ever seen her as a person, not a decorative object, if all her wild behavior had been as much a cry for recognition as Esme's dreams. And she, too, had treated Brunn as a silly piece of decorative statuary. She had not seen the person behind the pretty face, the lovely hair, the exuberance. Familiar guilt rolled over her, and she pushed it away. Guilt would not help. Remorse would not help. Brunn, the person, was in trouble, and Esme, the person, would have to figure out how to help her. And not by ignoring the person she was. Esme put her mind back on the problem as she spent an hour in the ship's countercurrent swim salon. She had heard that Brunn was pregnant. Would pregnancy give her a reason to stay alive or not? Would babies? Brunn had told Esme, the day of the disastrous argument, that she didn't want children. But that didn't mean she hated them.
That stuffed toy.
Esme stopped swimming, and the pool's current pushed her back to the edge. That stuffed toy from the Elias Madero. There had been children aboard, and no children's bodies had been found. If Brunn was with them, would that give her a focus, something to live for? Some reason to be patient, in a way that nothing in her past had made her patient? It might. Esme climbed out of the pool, dried off, and went back to her stateroom, hardly noticing those who spoke to her. She spent the last days of the transit putting together everything she remembered about the debris from the trader and Brunn, and trying out one scenario after another. If she had fixed on the children as a means of staying sane, she would want to bring them out too. Esme didn't let herself think it might be impossible. Cassie Ferrati was having more luck with blackening Esme Suiza's name than with capturing Baron Serrano. She had managed to get herself assigned to Admiral Hornan's personal staff with only the slightest, insignificant pressure on the Major, now Lieutenant Commander, she'd known so well on her first ship. Everyone knew she'd been Suiza's classmate, so her opinion had been asked more than once. She hadn't had to create opportunities to talk about Esme. With Suiza off on leave to her home planet, Cassie didn't even have to worry about contradiction.
And she really said she thought the Great Families were a ridiculous institution?
Cassie stared thoughtfully into the distance in a way that suggested noble reticence.
I think it's because Altiplano has no chair in council.
Neither did the Crescent Worlds, but that didn't matter.
There's no tradition of respect, you see?
I'm surprised I didn't notice anything when she was in the academy.
Master Chief Pell was, though enlisted, senior enough to have access to files in which Cassie had particular interest.
She kept a low profile. Actually, so did I. We were both outsiders in a way, you know. That's why we were together so much. And why I didn't realize that what she said was important. Then I got absorbed into things, you see, and just didn't notice.
It's not your fault.
Perhaps not. But I still feel bad about it. If only I'd known. Maybe all this could have been prevented.
Well, I don't see how you could...
I mean, if I'd realized how bitter she was towards the families, perhaps she would never have had any influence on Sarah Meager.
You can't mean she actually had something to do with the capture itself? I thought that was accidental. She just happened to enter the same system where they were plundering that merchanter.
A very handy coincidence, don't you think? And Sarah Meager had traveled widely. I find myself wondering why she happened to take that particular shortcut at that particular time.
And do you think Lieutenant Sweeza told her about that? Or told them?
I don't suppose we'll ever know.
The chances of this rescue succeeding were, in Cassie's unspoken opinion, so close to zero as to make no difference.
But does the Admiral know about this? That would be treason.
I'm sure someone else has thought of it. I'm only a lieutenant, and it occurred to me.
But you knew her before. Those more senior might not know what she said at the academy.
Well...
It was getting harder for Cassie to feign reluctance. She had trailed this particular theory across several potential helpers, and so far had no takers.
I think you ought to tell the Admiral. But it would help if you had any documentation.
I'm afraid not. The only files which might contain useful references are all well out of my clearance.
The following silence lasted so long, Cassie almost gave up. But at last, Pell's sluggish processors put two and two together.
Oh, you need access. What files do you have in mind?
I did just wonder if anything had come up during the investigation of that mutiny.
But surely you don't think... I mean, she was decorated for that action.
I think they might have been asking questions they didn't ask before. Even if they didn't look carefully at the answers.
Well, it won't be easy, Lieutenant, but I'll see what I can do. I'll see who I can talk to over in legal, but I'll let you know.
Cassie gave him the full benefit of her violet gaze and her smile.
Thanks. I just want to help.
Baron Serrano was used to fleet politics. He had grown up in that dangerous sea. He navigated the tricky currents of influence at the task force headquarters with care, noticing which competing fleet families were taking advantage of Lord Thornbuckle's present annoyance with the Serrano name. The Levadis were split, as usual. Some were proclaiming their friendship and loyalty to various Serrano seniors, like his grandmother, while others were passing snide remarks in the junior officers' recreation areas. Baron ignored the insults, but kept track. Someone in the family would need to know this when he had enough data. In another compartment of his busy brain, he began looking for signs of trouble in other Master Chief petty officers. Once is accident, twice is coincidence. He was willing to admit that Zuckerman could be an accident, and the others he'd heard of only as rumors. But if they were true, something was going on. His captain would have reported it, but in the present crisis, would anyone listen? His duties consisted mostly of hand-carrying data cubes back and forth. He spent plenty of time kicking his heels in someone's front office, and thus had plenty of time to chat with people with lots of time in grade, like the impossibly perky pivot major in front of him.
Like you take Chief Pell. I don't know if it's the strain of all this or what, but he's not the man he was last fleet birthday.
Really?
No! Why, the other day I had to look up access codes for legal investigations for him. I'm not even supposed to know the lockout sequences, but he started asking me to keep track of that 6 months ago, and he couldn't remember any of them.
Huh.
Baron's mind flickered over the reasons why Admiral Hornan's chief administrative NCO would be poking into legal investigations now, when supposedly the Admiral was after Baron's grandmother's job as task force commander. Maybe he was trying to get something on Harris Serrano, who had been through a sticky legal process.
I don't suppose you'd know whose files he was sucking.
That awful Esme Sweeza. The one that practically sold poor Lord Thornbuckle's daughter to the pirates.
Baron managed not to leap over the desk and snap the girl's neck, but it was an effort.
Whatever gave you that idea?
Well, everybody knows she hated her. And I heard Lieutenant Ferrati say that if everyone had known what she knew about Lieutenant Suiza, she'd never have been allowed near Sarah Meager.
Baron mentally moved a marker in his head to change Cassie Ferrati's label from nuisance to enemy.
She's so beautiful, isn't she?
Hmm?
Lieutenant Ferrati. You're lucky she likes you. She could have any man on the base.
Probably has.
The pivot glared at him.
Them all thinking about her.
She held the glare long enough to let him know she wasn't convinced, then relaxed.
She's a fine officer, and Chief Pell thinks so too. So does the Admiral.
Does he now?
Baron went out, thinking hard in several directions, and nearly ran over the fine, beautiful Lieutenant Ferrati.
Oh, Ensign.
Yes, sir?
Have you heard anything from Lieutenant Suiza?
No, sir. I believe the lieutenant is on leave, isn't she?
Yes, but actually, I wanted to talk to you about her.
Now it was coming. He gripped his temper firmly by the collar and waited.
I know you used to be friends.
We served together on Kosciusko.
I know, and I heard you were friends. And I'm sorry, but I think you should know that continuing that friendship would not be in your best professional interest.
As if Ferrati cared about his professional standing, other than to take advantage of his family name.
I have not had any contact with Lieutenant Suiza since Copper Mountain.
Very wise.
Baron headed back to Gerfalcon's berth, hoping that Captain Escobar was aboard. This time, he knew when to call for help. Escobar was not aboard. He was at another meeting.
Is there something I could answer?
Yes, sir, quite possibly, but it would be better somewhere else.
Trouble?
Perhaps.
Stan, you have the bridge. Come on, then. We'll use the captain's office.
Baron had just time to realize that he might be scuttling several careers, not just his own, when Dockery turned to him.
Out with it, then. Find another problem with Master Chiefs?
Baron's jaw almost dropped.
As a matter of fact, sir, possibly yes. But that's not my main concern.
Which is?
Best get it out quickly before he was tempted to soften it.
Sir, an officer from this ship has accessed records which he has no legitimate interest in, and may have given false information about someone else.
That's a serious charge about an indefinite. I presume you have a name for each of these?
Yes, sir. Lieutenant Ferrati talked a Master Chief named Pell, who, incidentally, is known to his juniors to be forgetting things this past year, into accessing Lieutenant Suiza's legal records from the court-martial.
It didn't occur to you that she might have had orders to do so? She is on Admiral Hornan's staff for the present.
No, sir. If she'd had orders, she'd have gone through channels, not Chief Pell.
And you also accuse her of giving false information about Lieutenant Suiza? What kind of false information?
She said a lot of things about what Lieutenant Suiza was like in the academy. Now, I was too far behind to have witnessed any of this directly, but other people who were there don't have the same account at all.
I know that Lieutenant Ferrati's been interested in you, Ensign. It's been fairly obvious. Scuttlebutt had it, you were falling under her spell, I believe is the term I heard used most. Are you sure this isn't just a lover's quarrel you're trying to make official business? Because if so, you're about to be in more trouble than you were over Zuckerman.
No, sir, it is not a lover's quarrel. I have no interest in Lieutenant Ferrati and never did.
The other rumor was that you had been in love with Ismay Suiza.
Baron felt his face getting hot. The exec nodded.
And so the other possibility I see is that you're accusing Lieutenant Ferrati of unprofessional behavior toward another officer because you're still besotted with Suiza and can't stand to hear her criticized.
Sir, I became very fond of Lieutenant Suiza when we were both on Kosciusko. I think she's a fine officer. We quarreled at Copper Mountain over what she said to Brune Meager, and I haven't seen her since. Whether I have a bad case of hero worship, which is what Lieutenant Ferrati's told me, or a friendship, or something else, it doesn't really matter. What does is whether the stories Ferrati's spreading about her are true.
If they were true, what would you think?
Baron felt a pain in his chest, squeezing out hope.
Then, sir, I would have to change my opinion.
Ensign, I'm going to tell you something in confidence, because right now, you need to know it. Cassie Ferrati has been trouble for every commander she's had. It's why she's at the back of her class's promotion list. But she's never quite managed to get herself thrown out. If Lieutenant Sweeza hadn't had that quarrel with Sarah Meager, if Lord Thornbuckle hadn't fastened on her as a scapegoat in this mess, no one would be paying the slightest attention to Ferrati's accusations. Now they are. And if she's so far overreached herself as to break regulations concerning legal paperwork, we've got her at last. Tell me, do you know if Katsuda's is still running scan on your cousin's ship?
I think so, sir.
Good. We're going to need really good scan to catch her in the act, because she's no dummy. And by the way, good job on finding Pell. We found two others here, though we haven't figured out what the problem is yet.
A half hour later, Baron was on his way to the berth of the Navarino, his cousin Harris's ship. Harris was at home to family members. He had the distinct feeling that if he'd been an ensign named, perhaps, Levati or Hornin, he might have cooled his heels for an hour before getting in to see her.
You want my scan tech sucking data for you? What's wrong with yours? Escobar's always been able to pick good people.
Dockery had left it to him how much to tell, but this was family. Baron made it as short as he could, emphasizing that he had thought at first it was Harris's record Ferrati was after, in order to help Hornin wrest command of the task force from Admiral Serrano.
Are you involved?
No, and yes. Lieutenant Ferrati also happens to see me as her ticket to the Serrano dynasty.
Does she now? And what do you think she's done that you need Kutsudas to discover?
Gone hunting and supposedly secure legal files and possibly altered data, sir.
That last was his own guess. Dockery hadn't been impressed by it, but he was sure that if Ferrati would lie verbally, she would not be above fudging the records.
Ah. Well, tell you what. You can have a couple of hours of Kutsuda's time, but I get the whole story afterwards.
Yes, sir.
And your captain owes me dinner.
Now how am I going to explain that one?
Baron returned thoughtfully to Jurfalcon's berth and reported his success to Dockery.
Kutsuda's will be along after lunch, sir.
Good. In the meantime, I want you to go destroy property and get yourself chewed out.
Sir?
Go find Lieutenant Ferrati, which shouldn't be hard, as you say, she's been adherent, and figure out some way to damage her data wand. I want her to have to initialize another. I don't care how you do it, as long as you don't damage the lieutenant. But I will mention that just dropping one in an alcoholic beverage is not sufficient. On the other hand, the application of sufficient point pressure is.
Baron set out on this mission with the uneasy feeling that Dockery's past might be more interesting than he had thought.
How did Dockery discover that dropping a data wand in alcohol wouldn't damage it?
Ferrati found Baron just as he was turning into the junior officer's mess and recreation area.
Lunch, Ensign?
Oh, yes. Excuse me, Lieutenant.
Baron made a show of patting his pockets.
Drat.
What?
I was supposed to check on something for Commander Dockery, and then Major Carmody asked me something else, and I forgot my data wand. It's back aboard. I'll have to go back, unless I could borrow yours, sir.
Ferrati pulled hers from a pocket.
You should carry it with you all the time. What did Dockery want?
Spares delivery schedule. He says they've shorted on pre-debts the last four times. You probably know all about it.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's complaining.
Ferrati handed over the wand, and Baron looked around. The nearest high-speed data port was almost to the next intersection.
I'll just be a moment. I heard they have Lasafarin snailfish chowder today.
Sure enough, she went into the mess. Snailfish chowder was a rare treat. Baron found the high-speed port and jammed the data wand in. Nothing happened. It lit up normally. He pulled it back out, looked around, and shoved it in as hard as he could. Its telltales came up normal again. He pulled it out and looked at the tip. Someone had designed it to withstand normal carelessness, and he realized that a high-speed data port probably had internal cushions to protect the port side of the contact as well.
Great. Now what?
Cassie would be looking for him any moment. A thought occurred. He went back into the lounge, waved to Lieutenant Ferrati, who had found a seat at a small table facing the entrance, and pointed at the head, then strode quickly in that direction, as if in urgent need. Heads were full of hard surfaces.
Damn! Oh, come on! Yes!
Baron finally produced a crumple at the Datawan's tip by catching it between the door and its jamb, and then squashing it with the door as a lever. He'd had no idea Datawans were that tough. He shrugged as he seated himself across from Lieutenant Ferrati and handed her the wand.
Sorry, sir. Some kind of bug, I expect.
She had tucked it away without looking at it.
So, you're not having chowder?
No, sir. In fact, I think I'll just sit here, if that's all right.
Of course.
She gave him one of her looks from under long eyelashes. Despite his opinion of her, Baron felt a stir, and she knew it. He could have strangled her for that alone. He hoped very much he'd done enough damage to that data wand. Esme changed into her uniform aboard the ship that had brought her and took the tram over to the fleet side. She nodded to the security posted at the entrance to the fleet side of the station.
Lieutenant Sweeza.
Welcome home, Lieutenant.
The greeting was merely ritual, but she felt welcomed nonetheless. Beyond the checkpoint, the corridors were busy. No one seemed to notice her. No reason why they should. She paused to check the status boards. The task force was still here. Her ship was still docked at the station. She entered her name and codes and found that she was still on the crew list, though coded for leave status, away. All other leaves had been canceled.
Well, if it isn't Lieutenant Sweeza.
Esme turned to find herself face to face with Admiral Hornan. He was looking at her with considerably less than pleasure.
I thought you had indefinite leave.
I did, sir. But we got everything taken care of back home, and I came back at once.
Couldn't leave it alone, could you? Think you'll have a chance to gloat over the Speaker's daughter if we get her out?
No, sir. Gloating was never my intention.
You did not think she richly deserved what she got? That's not what I heard.
Sir, I neither said nor thought that Brune deserved to be kidnapped and raped.
I see. You did, however, say that she wasn't worth going to war over.
Sir, I said that no one makes war over one person, not that she wasn't worth it. That is what others have said as well.
Well, that may be, Lieutenant. But the fact remains that what is on the record is your statement that she wasn't worth a war.
Before she could answer, if she could have thought of an answer, the Admiral turned away. So much for making allies. She couldn't think of anything she might have said to change his mind. Esme had never really thought about the people who might be annoyed or envious because of her success. But now she realized that her peers were used to thinking of her as a non-entity, no threat to their own career plans. The very suddenness of her success must have made her seem even more dangerous to those inclined to think that way than she really was. They would doubt her real ability, or fear it. Once she'd thought of it, she felt stupid for not thinking of it before. The problem was, until recently, she had been just existing alongside others, unaware of them except where interaction was required. So she had no idea which of them thought of her as a rival and which as a potential friend, except for Baron. She arrived at her assigned quarters, still thinking this over. She unpacked her duffel and began looking up references on the cube reader. When Esme opened the door, she was facing an elderly woman she had never seen before in her life, a civilian woman who carried herself with the confidence of an admiral, or a very rich and powerful person.
You don't look like a desperate schemer.
The old woman's night-black hair was streaked with silver, bushing out into a stormy mass. And with her brilliantly colored flowing clothes, she looked like a figure out of legend. Grana Owl, or the Moonborn Mage, or something like that.
I'm Marta Katarina Saenz, by the way. My niece Raffaella went to school with Brunmiga. May I come in?
Of course.
Esme backed up a step, and the woman came in.
You are, I presume, Lieutenant Esme Sweeza, just returned from leave on Altiplano?
Yes, Sarah.
Marta Saenz looked her up and down, very much as her own great-grandmother had done.
You also don't look like a fool.
Esme said nothing as the old woman stalked about the room, her full sleeves fluttering slightly. She came to rest with her back to the door and cocked her head at Esme.
No answer? Indirect questions don't work? Then I'll ask outright. Are you a heartless schemer, glad to make a profit out of another woman's shame and misery?
No. No, Sarah.
You aren't glad the Speaker's daughter was captured?
Course not. I know that's what people think, but it's not true.
When you have called someone, what was it? Oh, yes. A stupid, selfish, sex-crazed hedonist with no more morals than a bitch in heat, people are going to get the idea you don't like her.
I didn't like her, but I didn't want this to happen to her.
Ah. And did you think she was morally lacking?
Yes, though that still doesn't mean...
I honor your clear vision, young woman, which can so easily find where others are lacking. I wonder, have you ever turned that clear vision on yourself?
I am stubborn, priggish, rigid, and about as tactful as a rock to the head.
So you're not casting yourself as the faultless saint in this drama?
Saint? No, of course not.
Ah. So when you decided she was lacking in moral fiber, you were comparing her to an objective standard?
Yes.
Esme wasn't even sure why she was answering this person. She had been over this so often without convincing anyone. The old woman nodded, as if to some unheard comment.
If I was simply going by Brun's past behavior, I'd say there's a man at the bottom of this.
Esme felt her face heating.
I thought as much. And who, pray tell, is the young man on whom Brun set her sights and whom you think you love?
I do love...
Esme felt her face getting even hotter.
Baron Serrano.
Oh, my.
The old lady blinked and pursed her lips. Then she smiled.
I have known Brun since she was a cute, spoiled toddler they called Bubbles.
Bubbles?
Stupid nickname. Gave the girl a lot of trouble because she thought she had to live up to it. But anyway, I've known her that long. And you are right that she was as badly spoiled as it's possible for a person of her abilities to be. My niece Raffaella was one of her close friends. And Raffa, like you, was one for getting other people out of scrapes. She got Brun out of a lot of them.
Esme wasn't sure she was following whatever chain of logic the old woman was forging. She was still too shaken at having admitted to a stranger that she loved Baron Serrano.
Tell me that Brun Meager has no morals and I find myself defending her. But tell me that she cast covetous eyes on your young man, and I am not only willing to believe it, but not even mildly surprised. She's been that way since she first discovered boys. She collects them like charms on a bracelet, with reprehensible lack of concern for anyone's feelings. Or she did. Rafa said she'd been more discreet in the past few years. Apparently, someone she took a fancy to refused to have a fling with her.
Baron didn't. I mean, he wasn't the one, but he also didn't.
But what you should know is that while Brun's moral qualities are certainly immature, the girl had the right instincts about many things. She's been wild, heedless, rebellious, but she's not wittingly cruel.
She said a few things to me, too.
Esme was mortified at how childish that sounded.
In the heat of an argument, yes, she would. Both of you sound rather like fishwives in the tape. Suppose you tell me how you met her and what happened then.